You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, it's Monday, it's a mailbag show, it's a weekend recap of the Sixers game, which we'll go into. And today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek, so we'll be hearing from them in a moment. But first, I just want to say something. So, late on Sunday, you know, we got these tweets coming out from a couple different places. From Tim Cato, who's, you know, a great reporter for SB Nation and Mavs Moneyball, that the Dallas Mavericks have revoked the credentials of Tim McMahon and Mark Stein. Now, if you don't know who they are, Mark Stein is obviously an insider. Tim McMahon covered the Mavs and covers the NBA for ESPN. They are the best of the best, pros of journalists. From what we can tell so far, what has come out, it seems like the Mavericks weren't happy with ESPN's coverage, or lack thereof, of the Mavericks from McMahon, who is now more of a general NBA reporter as opposed to just a Mavs reporter. And that's why the credentials are revoked. They've been also banned from the arena. They can go in and buy tickets, is what seems to be the case, and they can't no longer do their jobs. It is crap. That is utter crap that they have been banned, that they have had their credentials revoked. And I hope that gets resolved immediately. It is crap that a team would do that, if that is in fact the reason why, that they would take away a reporter's credential for doing that. Covering basketball is not, you know, is maybe as serious as covering presidential politics or world affairs or anything like that, but it is a matter. Journalism is a pillar of democracy. It is an essential part of the American democracy, and revoking credentials for that, for being unhappy with how much your team is getting covered, is utter crap. It is childish. And I hope Tim McMahon and Mark Stein, who, just so you guys know, I don't know. I've never met them. I just follow their work, and they're pros, and they do a great job if you just read their stuff. And everyone who knows them has nothing but great things to say about them. They should have their credentials back. There is no reason they should be banned. So that's my two cents on that. I just don't think there is a reason those guys should have their credentials revoked. Anyway, today's podcast, as I said, is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets for any concert or sporting event that you may want to go to. If you need tickets for a Cavs game, or a Browns game, if that's your jam, or a Lakers-Monster game in Cleveland, that is the best way for you to do it. You just download the app for free right on your iPhone or Android, any smartphone, and you can search whatever you're looking for. You can, you know, see the values of the tickets. You can see if they're good or bad based on how the app rates them. If it's green, it's good. If it's red, it is bad. You can also see the view of your ticket right in the app. Review what your seat would be right in the app. And there's no other app that's going to let you do that and give you all the information from all the other ticket sites. SeatGeek is going to give you the best option for whatever you want to go to. I myself used it to see the Kanye West show when it was in Cleveland. I knew exactly what I was going to pay. I knew I had no issues, and I couldn't have been happier using SeatGeek. And today, my listeners can save $20 off their first purchase by using the code LOCAVS. That's LOCEVS. And just enter that under the settings tab right in the SeatGeek app, and you'll get a $20 mail-in rebate off your first SeatGeek order. So again, use SeatGeek, the best way to buy and sell tickets. Use that promo code LOCAVS, and I promise you will not regret downloading that app and going to see something that I know you already want to see. So check that out. And anyway, we're going to get back into today's programming. We're going to start with the Sixers game from over the weekend. Obviously, the Cavs won that game 102-101. And we're going to do as we normally do, three takeaways, player of the game, and a couple wine and gold winners. First up, the Cavs' effort level in this game was not particularly great the whole time. There were some issues, but, you know, we read and heard about how they had a few players, Kyrie Irving and Amon Shumpert, and GM David Griffin have issues getting to the arena due to an issue with the bus, and they had to take an Uber. And that wouldn't totally seem locked in, and the Sixers are not the best team in the league by any stretch of the imagination. So you could just tell that they weren't really getting up. This is a game, I fought, as I mentioned in my preview of this game, they really should have gotten through this quick. They should have won this game by a lot, gotten guys rest, and it shouldn't have been a game. Instead, we saw the Cavs play to that team's level, the Sixers' level, really struggle at times. Kyrie had the worst game of the year, his worst game of the year, and it just kind of, they barely won. They, you know, just the Sixers played a little more energy. The Cavs didn't have it, and that effort level, that energy level, didn't really give them a really good chance of winning that game how they probably should have. And to look at Kyrie Irving, you know, he struggled for the second game in a row. So I would say game and a half. He played okay, you know, in the first half of that Celtics game. But he did definitely struggle for most of Saturday. We know that is partially because of the Uber thing. That is something he attributed to, and I think that makes sense. You know, he's a guy who seems to very much value his routine. It kind of messed up his day. And just like any of us, that's going to happen. When your routine gets messed up, that certainly plays an impact on it. But it's also a game Kyrie probably should have played a big role in. The Sixers, as if you follow the NBA, you know this, they don't have a good point guard situation. They haven't for years. They don't have guys that are going to stop Kyrie or be able to stop Kyrie. He really could have had a big game here against Philly, and he didn't. It's not a cause of concern at all, but I think when Kyrie doesn't play to the level he's capable of, they're certainly going to struggle. This is a guy who has taken on a big role in the Cavs offense this year. He's been just such a big part of what this team has done, and I think you just have to know how important he is, how much he matters. And I think Saturday, when you see a guy who, you know, is leading the team in scoring, leading the team in shot attempts, plays such an important role on the team, you know, it didn't matter. And really, if you look at the overall part of this game, the Cavs may not have won if the Sixers didn't really botch the end of game replay there. And that in itself, you know, guys, that it's not every game is going to be great. Not every game is going to be a blowout, but just not a great game. Kyrie was 3-17, only 8 points. Only got to the line 3 times. Just 2 assists against 4 turnovers. He was totally out of whack. And you could see in the Cavs' performance how much that hurt. The good news, if we're going to give a more positive takeaway here, is that this does lead into an easy week for the Cleveland Cavaliers. For one, they don't play again until tomorrow, so they've had 2 full days off of games. And then they're off again until Friday. And then they are off again until Sunday. So this isn't like they played this game that they needed a bunch of rest, because they had back-to-backs coming up after playing a very bad team. They get built-in rest anyway. I'm of the opinion that I think it would have been better for them to get in, get out, get a bunch of rest. That obviously didn't happen, and there's nothing you can do about it now. But if there is something good coming out of this, I think they know that their defense isn't where it exactly should be. They finished the game playing good defense, won the game because of defense, and then get some rest anyway, even if it wasn't the type of rest you would have liked. I think in an ideal world, LeBron would have played barely at all the fourth quarter. Ditto for Kyrie and Kevin Love. You would have got Kay Felder minutes, and Tyronn Lue did hint at that before the game. And I think you really just could have had Saturday be a little bit more optimal. That being said, does not matter all that much. It's still early in the year. It didn't lead into a long road trip or back-to-backs, so it's fine. The player of the game, of course, LeBron James. You know, started off a little bit slow, didn't do a ton, but ended up finishing with 25 points. You know, didn't shoot well, only 9 of 23 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, but had 8 rebounds, 14 assists, you know, 2 steals, and he also historically became one of the NBA's top 10 all-time leading scorers. Passed Hakeem Olajuwon. And now he added another big moment to his, another big clip to his resume. So big night for LeBron, a big night for the Cavs because of that, and it's a pretty cool moment. He got so close to it, to getting it at home, but, you know, LeBron said that he led the team in scoring, he was big for them late, did a lot of just kind of stuff on his own, played well down the stretch. and entered the top 10. And the entering the top 10 alone made that game really about him, more so if they won or lost, in my opinion. So the couple wine and gold winners. First off, Channing Frye's stroke looks fantastic. He's shooting over 50% from three. He's nailing threes from the top of the key, and he just looks great. He looks like he's getting into full season form, which is great. He's such a useful player for this team. He's back after the death of his mother, and he just looks like a very stout player. So Iman Shumpert had a dribble and dunk in this game. You can look at the clip of that over at Fear the Sword. He really just stood out because he actually pulled off a crossover and then just threw down a vicious dunk. He's playing very well to start the year. He's shooting a little bit over his head, but he's doing these little basic point guard things that Tyronn Lue, as you heard when we recapped the Celtics game, wants him to do. And it's a positive step forward for Shump. That kind of stuff are good for him. And I think that's worth noting. Kevin Love in this game took Dario Saric to class. He literally dominated him. We like to see Kevin Love do that because I think it makes things more interesting. Kevin Love is a guy who has had a rough 2 years, but he's really, really having a great year this year. I think he's very much on pace, and it's early to becoming an all-star again. And he really just dominated the rookie in Dario Saric. He played great, finished with 20 points, an 8 of 16 shooting, 2 of 5 from 3, got to the line 3 times as well, 11 boards. And just was a very good performance from Kevin Love. And you gotta like what you saw out of him. He stepped up. He's been so consistent. I think he's maybe been the most consistent player for the team this year to date. And that certainly is a good sign for Kevin Love. That it is a good sign for the team as well. Lastly, if we're gonna do a last wine and gold winner here. Kevin Love also had the first TD pass assist of the year. Hit LeBron James. Those are always really fun. And if you're looking for something a little more in-depth in this game, just not a lot presented itself. Didn't see Kay Felder. They kind of just eked this out by not playing that well against a lesser team. And yes, Joel Embiid goaltended and whatever, but Joel means super fun. And I enjoy watching him play. And that's kind of it from the Sixers game. They won. They're still undefeated, which is notable as well. Last undefeated team in the NBA. I think they actually have a pretty good chance of letting that run for a little bit longer. The schedule's set up for them to keep winning, even as long as they don't, just play an incredibly sloppy game or something like that. So I think the Cavs are in a really good spot, even if they haven't played exactly to the level you would hope they would, or you'd like them to in an ideal world. So we'll be right back, and we're going to answer your questions right after a little pause.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So now we are going to go into the mailbag portion of the show. As always, please submit your questions to me on Twitter at LockedOnCavs or to email at LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. We got a lot of great ones this week, and I'm really, really thankful for everyone submitting questions. It means a lot. And anything you want to ask, NBA, Cavs, if you just have a general, just fun question, I'm going to talk about whatever. But before we answer questions, just going to read a review like I plan to do every Monday. If you want to get a shout-out on the show, the best way to do that is to go leave that 5-star review. Go give us a nice, long, written review about the show, and I will give you a shout-out on the show if you do that. We're going to do this every week. And so just go give us that 5-star review, and you'll have a chance to get shouted out on the show. So today's comes from Cracking in Chicago. He says, "Elite podcast, insightful, funny, in-depth. My favorite Cavs podcast. Chris is an expert in all things Cleveland Cavaliers, and his guests are great. High quality audio, too." So shout out to Cracking in Chicago for that review. And again, you can be like him or her, whoever that is, and you can get a shout out on the show by going and leaving me a 5-star review on iTunes. So to answer today's questions, here we go. Question number one comes from Dave Z in Brecksville. He writes, "Hi, Chris. Hope this note finds you well. I am a big fan of the podcast, as well as the rest of your writing. Keep up the great work. One of the biggest questions I have about this team so far is, what do you think the biggest improvements it's made as a unit are? team is obviously really successful out of the gate. In your opinion, is this team just a better version, a more polished version of last year's team, or is there something they've done stylistically, schematically, that has allowed them to have such early success? Thanks for taking the time to read this. Hope you have a great week. Excited for this week's pods. What a great note via email, so shout out to Dave. And I'll enter this way. I think this is, in theory, the best Cavs team we've had in the second LeBron era. I think, LeBron's playing still at a very high level. Kyrie's healthy. Love looks just certainly a lot better. And we're going to talk about this issue later this week with Carter Rodriguez from Fear the Sword. But I think the big thing we're seeing is they're optimizing every player. Kyrie's getting to score, which is what he does best. Kevin Love is getting used as a legit offensive player and not just someone as a token post-up guy or a spot-up three-point shooter. They're giving him elbow touches. They're giving him post-ups. He's dribble driving from the wing and really just becoming a very good offensive player again. He's not full Minnesota Kevin Love, but that is not a realistic thing to expect when he's playing with LeBron and Kyrie. And I think that's really it. I think schematically, Tyronn Lue, a full year of him certainly helps. I don't think they're doing much different than what we've seen. I think the ball movement's a little bit crisper. We're not seeing as much bogged down isolation stuff, but we're seeing them play maybe a tad faster, which I know Tyronn Lue is a fan of. But I don't think schematically they're doing anything different. I think stylistically you're seeing different looks. I think you're seeing different paces, and I think schematically, if there's anything, it's the how they're using Kyrie. They're using Love, which in Love, of course, is the bigger one. Kyrie's role right now isn't all that dissimilar to what we saw in the playoffs. His usage rate is slightly lower. He's not shooting well from 2-point range, and I think once he gets up there, he's gonna be even better than he is now, and he's played pretty well. And plus, it's a hashtag small sample size, so you're not seeing necessarily a large 20-game sample of Kyrie. I mean, he struggled really bad on Saturday, and then his averages drop, and that certainly is going to happen. So I think that's kind of it. I think they're having early success because they're clearly better than everyone they've played. They're getting more out of everyone. LeBron is playing this role where he's doing everything, and I think they're a better version. And plus, I'll say this, continuity certainly matters for this team. You have Channing Frye and Mike Dunleavy is the most recent additions. Frye having played here for about half a year. And they do something very simple, which is catch threes and shoot. They are guys who are going to fill these very niche roles that don't need a lot of tweaking. Everyone else has been around this team for a year and a half at minimum. And they have adjusted. And they won the title. And all of that comes together to lead to this, which is just a very, very good Cavs team. That might be the best we've seen yet in Cleveland in the second LeBron era. Pat Kozowski, shout out to Pat Kozowski, friend of mine in real life, good guy. Did shirtless JR cause Indians to lose by making Cubs think, damn, I want to be that guy? Not going to rule it out, Pat. Not going to rule it out at all. But tip of the hat to the Cubs. Hope that city enjoys that World Series. And maybe the Indians will have healthy pitching next year and we'll get a rematch. And it'll be like the Cavs Warriors round two. That'd be certainly be cool. Also, how crazy it is that J.R. Smith, of all the players LeBron could have brought to Hillary Clinton's rally on Sunday, regardless of what you think of Hillary Clinton, how cool is it that he was at a Hillary Clinton rally on stage helping introduce someone who might be the president of the United States here pretty soon? Pretty dope. Christopher at chris.com asked, solve the backup PG issue in one tweet. So I actually wrote this out, and it's exactly 140 characters. So, play Felder more and see what happens. Maybe at a vet. But remember that LeBron and Kyrie will likely play staggered minutes in the playoffs. Basically what that means, I want to see K. Felder at a veteran like Mario Chalmers and see if that happens. But remember, when the playoffs come, LeBron and Kyrie are going to stagger minutes a little bit more, or at least they should in my opinion. And that's going to cover your backup point guard minutes there. You're not going to need a guy to play 20 minutes a game or something like that. You can basically have LeBron be Kyrie's backup. And Kyrie can get his minutes up more. But we'll see. Maybe right now they're playing a very tight 9-man rotation. And maybe Iman Shumpert does improve in some way. Although I wouldn't exactly hold my breath that that becomes a permanent thing. Especially because he's not going to shoot over 50% from 3 like he's right now for a full season. Those are just the facts. Facts only on Locked On Cavaliers, y'all. So, from question MVP Perry Kellis, who always asks great questions, he writes via email, does Tyreke Evans sound like a backup point guard target down the line? I assume the Pelicans will try everything in their power just to throw the whole season, even though they're without trying. I don't know what that means exactly, but what do you think the Cavs would have to give up for him? So the Pelicans are a tricky team because they get hurt. They have a lot of injuries. Evans is a guy who's been hurt, but they need to win because they have Anthony freaking Davis, and he's putting up these 50-point games, and they can't win. With Tyreke Evans, I think he'd be okay. I don't know exactly how good he is. He's not really a good shooter either, which matters. But I also don't know what the Cavs would really have to trade for him. He's a guy who has, you know, at least a tad bit of value. Not sure why, unless they just were just kind of done with him, why they would just dump him. You could certainly fit him in a trade exception. You could trade him for Amon Shumpert. You could do a couple things to get Tyreke, but he's not a guy that I would necessarily go chasing. I think he's fine. He's not, you know, amazing by any means. And he's also owed, you know, $11 million this year. He is owed about $10 million this year, looking at his numbers from, that was 2015-16, the $11 million. And so he's owed $10 million this year. You know, he's a free agent next summer. It'd be a rental probably. It's an okay option, I guess, but he doesn't move the needle a ton for me personally. I'd rather just, again, sign Mario Chalmers if I'm the Cavs and just roll with that. I think that's really the best bet. Tyler Allen at TCaw09. Why are the big three playing so many minutes? Is this something you expect to continue and just give them nights off? This is tricky because I think, you know, you look at how the Cavs are playing this. They're really leaning on a nine-man rotation right now. They're not playing a lot. Channing Frye is the backup center, and they're not playing Birdman, which means Kevin Love and everyone else in the front court is going to have to play more minutes. You look at how they're handling things. I think Tyronn Lue really is just kind of leading this set rotation right now, and he's not going to do any tweaking really to change something major. It seems like he wants this team to play together. He wants this team to really kind of have its rotation kind of snuffed out. He wants it to kind of be solidified. He doesn't want to necessarily rest guys unless it's, you know, a day off or something like that. But I think you have a pretty fair point there. You look at the minutes played. LeBron's playing 36.3. Kyrie's played 34.7. Love has played 32.5. I think that's a little bit high for those guys. Personally, I'd like to see them play a little bit less, ideally. Just because I think that makes the most sense if I'm coaching that team. And I think you'd want to get them close, at least cut 2 to 3, 4 minutes off those totals for those guys. Maybe that means you give Fry more minutes. Maybe that means you play Birdman. Maybe that means you play Kay Felder. Maybe that means you play Jordan McRae. I don't know. But I think you can still get them rest in blowouts. And I think that's maybe what you end up seeing. I think you look at the Warriors last year. They got guys rest, and it ended up being not, you know, obviously enough, because those guys did get tired. But maybe you can have some blowouts and get them rest. I think how many minutes they're playing now isn't exactly ideal. So I would certainly say to keep an eye on that. That's a very good question and something to keep an eye on. It's a good look at six games. It is a lot of minutes for them earlier in the year. But it's also like, you know, you're playing that nine-man rotation and you're going to lean on those guys a lot anyway. That's fine. James Watson at JimRun85. Do you think Kay Felder will see minutes exclusively with the Charge now that the D-League season is about to start? You know, if they're not going to play him, I really like that option. I think it's in the Cavs' best interest to send him somewhere where he can play a lot and develop. He can still practice with the Cavs, even if he's with the Charge, because they're so close. And now, because Quinn Cook is a guy who I like, and we've talked about on the show before, but the Cavs, he's playing for the Charge again, but the Cavs don't have him, you know, his right to go sign with anybody. They don't have investment in him as someone to develop down there. Send Felder there, let him play. That kind of sucks for Quinn Cook, who was the D-League Rookie of the Year last year, and is a very talented guy, but I think Kay Felder should go play there if he's not playing with the Cavs. I think there is some benefit to him traveling and learning the ropes of the NBA, but I'd rather him play. I'd rather, you know, look at C.J. McCollum spend time in the D-League and now look at him. I'm not saying Kay Feller is going to become C.J. McCollum, but it can work to send a guy who just needs to get some minutes, but there isn't necessarily a spot for him, or the team isn't comfortable putting him in a spot where I think it just makes a lot of sense to send him to Canton if they're willing to do so, personally. James asked another good question. On Twitter, do you think the Cavs will do something with Mo Williams before the 15th, since that's the first day players get a check? I don't know if that's the reason they would do something. I think, you know, it's pretty clear that he's not coming back. The Cavs, you know, they're not happy with him because he said he was going to retire, change his mind, and there's just all this drama, and then they're trying to dump his contract. I think they're going to move him the moment they can. I don't know if the 15th is, you know, exactly the reason why, or if that's exactly even the day they first get paid. I would just say that the moment they can, move him, they will definitely move on from Mo Williams. That's just a fact. He's not coming back. And they just need someone to take him so they can waive him and not have to pay him anything out of that $2.2 million he is currently owed. Move on to a question from Super Science Saint at Kira 16. If the Cavs had a shot at Rudy Gay for a trade exception or a buyout, would you take him? I would say sure, I guess. I wouldn't use a trade exception that's burning an asset on a guy who's going to be a free agent and is getting paid a lot of money. But if he's, you know, on a buyout and you get him for veterans minimum, sure. He's a guy who, you know, has had a lot of success doing certain things, and if you want to argue his success level, that's okay too, because it's whatever. He can score, he can kind of defend, he can play the 3 and the 4. You know, I think he's a guy who just seems destined to be, like, get traded to the Clippers for a future first-round pick, but if he's available on a buyout and the Cavs can get him and you at least take a run at it, I guess, sure, but I wouldn't be going out of my way to get Rudy Gay. I'm not a big fan of his. I don't think he's, you know, all that great. He's fine. He can do some things. I really liked him as a small ball 4 in the 2014 FIBA World Cup, where Kyrie Irving won MVP. He was very, very good in that tournament. And I kind of always wondered why he doesn't play more 4, and he can kind of shoot 3s. And you could talk me into it, but I wouldn't be going out of my way to be getting Rudy Gay on the Cavs. A couple months ago, I would have vehemently said no. So I'm softening a little bit on that, and I think, I'll say this, I think the big thing is you always need wings in the NBA, especially now, and if you can get a guy like Rudy Gay for on the cheap on a buyout, you can certainly play, and if take some easing off LeBron down the stretch, the regular season, and gives you a guy who can help you go small, and maybe is younger and better than RJ and Dunleavy, that's okay. I think that could work. I would certainly not, again, be in love with the idea, but it is okay. It's fine. James Watson has one other question. Do you have any good books you would recommend about anxiety? I thought you mentioned on one of the podcasts before. So yeah, I did. I'm a big proponent of mental health. I think it's something we don't take seriously enough in society, and I don't mean to be, you know, talking about that if that's going to be, but I'm not someone who sticks to sports. I think anxiety is a very real thing. I know someone else tweeted, it might have been James, about the Royce Young interview. I haven't listened to it yet, but I've read stuff with him and Dave Zirin, who's actually been on the show, and I'm a huge fan of Dave Zirin's. And I think anxiety is a real issue we talk about. I've read two things about anxiety that have always stood out to me. Dan Harris from ABC News wrote this book called 10% Happier. It's a lot about meditation and his struggles of trying to be this great journalist and fulfilling his career goals and kind of learning how to meditate, and that has always been big. And then I can't remember the name of the book, but I read this kind of Buddhism book that I found really interesting about meditation, and about balance in life and things like that. And those to me are really, really useful. I'm a person who meditates literally every day using this app called Headspace. Free plug for Headspace. Headspace, if you want to sponsor this podcast, email me, lockedoncavs@gmail.com. I love your app. Sponsor this podcast. But I use that every day. And anxiety to me is something it's real. I'm a very anxious person. If you've met me in real life, you certainly would know that. And I think it's something worth talking about. And also would say there's this book that just came out by Angela Duckworth called Grit. That's about finding a lot of the indicators of success isn't how skilled you are or how smart you are on an IQ test. It's about how mentally tough you are and gritty you are. And that isn't directly related to anxiety, but to me, I think it fits sort of in that realm. And I learned a lot from it. And I think, you know, we learned that it's really about loving the process and loving the little things that sometimes can be very stressful. That are really what makes us or makes certain people great at what they do. So the last question comes from at Ben Shirley. He says, whose signature shoe is the most popular in the NBA? I don't have, you know, we don't exactly have that exact data kind of right there. But I would say LeBron's are very popular. Kyrie's do very, very well. The Steph Curry's obviously do very, very well. The Kobe's do very, very well. LeBron's, I don't think, are quite as popular as they maybe could be. I think a retro line would certainly help. But I'll say this. I personally am a huge fan. And I'm a Nike guy. I've always worn Nikes. That's like what I grew up on. I'm a really big fan of the LeBron Soldier 10s. And I'm a fan of the Kyrie 2s. I have a pair of those. And I like the LeBron 13 lows. Those are the three Nike basketball shoes I own. Two of those I mostly wear casually. I play in the Kyrie 2s when I play pickup. And those are shoes like... But I mean, I'll tell you this. This is not a new thought. People have pointed this out before. If you go out in the world right now and you see what middle school kids are wearing, they're not wearing LeBrons, which might have been what kids wore when I was that age. They might have worn Kobe's too, or just some Hyper Dunks, or when I think because those came out around the time I was in middle school. You look at what they're wearing Kyrie 2s, or Kyrie 1s in some cases, and they're wearing the Curry's. They're wearing those two guys' signature shoe. They're a little bit cheaper. They're a little bit, and I think the players are guys who younger kids think they can be. Because you look at LeBron, you don't see a guy who you think you can necessarily be because of how powerful he is, how strong he is, how fast he is at 6'8". You see Kyrie, I mean, it's a little bit crazy because, like, you know, he's 6'3 and whatever, but you think maybe I can be that guy. Or Curry, who is, you know, us like 6-something, 6'3", I think, as well. You think, oh, maybe I can be that guy and hit shots like that. That's why I buy those shoes. And I would say those two are certainly very, very popular. But LeBron's do very well. Jordan's do very well. There's a lot of really popular shoes out there. And the shoe, I mean, there's just a ton of really fun options. I would say probably just in that, it's interesting that the Kyrie 2s and the Curry's, I believe the Curry 2s have done, like, really, really well in the past year or so. But I don't exactly know exactly what most popular would be. But if you're going to ask me my favorites right now, the Soldier 10s, which I know get killed a bunch of sneakerheads a little bit because they're not the best-looking shoe, but to me, they're the Nikes, like the KD9s that don't have laces. And they're just so comfortable. Like, the 13 lows are comfortable. The Kyrie 2s are comfortable, especially after I broke them in. But the Soldier 10s, to me, are just incredibly comfortable. Looking forward to getting to play in them a little bit because they're a little bit sturdier for someone like me who, you know, could cut some elbows and, you know, plays a little bit heavier on the court. So that's going to be it for today's show. Thanks for all those great questions. Had a ton of fun answering them. Hope you like the Sixers recap as well. Tomorrow we'll be previewing Tuesday's game against the Atlanta Hawks.